At the Tony Awards this Sunday, my guest Paul Gemignani will be given a Lifetime Achievement Award. Broadway audiences don't get to see much of him because he's usually in the pit conducting the orchestra. Gemignani is a music director who has worked with Stephen Sondheim since 1973 on such musicals as A Little Night Music, Sweeney Todd, Pacific Overtures, Sunday in the Park with George, Merrily We Roll Along, and Passion. Gemignani was also the music director for the revival of Brigadoon, the hit Crazy for You, and several operas. He's currently with the revival of Kiss Me, Kate. As the music director, he helps cast the performers and hire the orchestra. He rehearses the musicians and singers and is the liaison between the composer and the rest of the company. During performances, he conducts the musicians and singers. Gemignani says he particularly enjoyed serving as music director on Sondheim's Sweeney Todd. Here's the opening.
The tale of Sweeney Todd. His skin was pale and his eye was odd. He shaved the faces of gentlemen who never thereafter were heard of again. He trod a path that few have trod, did Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street.
He kept a shop in London town, fancy clients and good renown. And what if none of their souls were saved? They went to their maker impeccably shaved. By Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street.
In Sweeney Todd, I think the first that sound we hear is that steam whistle, a really discordant, shrill, alarming steam whistle that certainly sets the tone for, you know, a musical that's about very alarming thoughts and feelings and actions, including murder and revenge.
Right.
Did you actually have a steam whistle in the orchestra?
What happened was, it said in the opening thing on the top, it said whistle. Factory whistles is what it said. So we sat down and had discussions about what a factory whistle was. And I said, well, you mean the kind that has, like, thing that popped into my mind is those old English factory movies, or you know, like Dirk Bogart movies, where he's in a blue-collar section of somewhere in Britain, and his father works in the mines or in the factory, and on the top of that factory is this whistle that's actually made work from steam, right? Pretty shrill sounding. Yes, so I searched down. We finally found this actual factory whistle, and we hooked it up to a CO2 canister, and that's how we operated it. I operated it, actually, from a switch in the pit.
Huh.
And what they did was they put it in several places, but it was so intense that they had to keep moving it further away because the audience would, you know, like leap out of their seats. So we ended up putting it way up at the top. I don't know what you ever saw or pictures of the original production in New York, but
I saw the roadshow in Philadelphia.
Okay, well, the only difference between the roadshow and the one in New York is that Eugene Lee, the set designer, actually found a foundry roof somewhere in Vermont and had the thing, a foundry that was falling down, but the entire glass roof was, smoky glass roof with broken panes in it, was still intact. So they moved that entire thing to New York and put it up, erected it in the Urus, or the whatever you call it today, Gershwin Theater. And it was hanging over the orchestra pit. It went all the way to the back of the stage and hung over the orchestra pit in about 10 rows into the audience, over your head. So what we did is we put that whistle way up high. What we did on the road is we just put it up in the flies somewhere. And it was there for exactly what you said it was there for, shock value, and to start a musical about revenge.
Where did you find the factory whistle?
I didn't. The sound man did. I went to the sound designer and I said, I need a factory whistle. And he said, you mean the kind that I said, no, I mean the steam kind that go on the top of a building. So where am I going to find that? I said, oh, no, that's your job. So he did. He brought several back. And actually what we did in rehearsal, I remember the first day that he brought that in and we hooked it up to a CO2 canister in the front of the stage. And I said, well, Charlie said, you want me to play this? And he said, well, how loud is it? I said, I have no idea. I've never heard it. And said, well, let's play it. And I played it. It's like we almost all passed out from the sound. but it did what it was supposed to do.
I'm assuming that when you're conducting in a show that you have the whole score in front of you and the whole libretto in front of you, that you know you have in front of you all the lines that are going to be said.
It's in my head. I memorize like the actors do.
So you don't even have that in front of you? You know what that will?
No, no. I don't know why I do that, but I've always done it. So it's a lot easier. It's a lot more allows me to be more involved with the performance if I don't have to stare down at music. Of course, you know, if it's a concert or if it's something I just got, absolutely, I read whatever it is. Most of the time, I memorize the lines very quickly in my head because you do have rehearsals, and they go in my head that way. It's not something I actually make an effort to do, it just does it. So I would say that by the end of the first week of previews, most of the shows I've done, I already have in my head memorized.
So have you ever been called on to fill in for an actor?
No. I won't be either. Now, apparently you've never seen me act.
What are some of the ways that you can help out a performer during the show?
I think the biggest way is to be attentive. I mean, you know, we're talking about highly trained professionals, and the level of mistakes or errors or misjudgments are really rare. In fact, most of the time, what will happen is the set will mess up way before any of us will mess up. But I think being totally attentive to their performance and being there, even if they don't need you every second, is the biggest support system you can give a performer, and that's what I try and do. I mean, if you notice, James Levine at the Met isn't staring down at the music very much. He's looking up at the stage, and that's what the theater's about. If you're a conductor and you're looking at the music, you're restricting yourself, and you're restricting the effect that you can have on the performance.
Do you ever help out with a forgotten line?
I have from time to time. Doesn't happen very often, but.
What do you do? Do you whisper it or just mouth it?
No, I just say it out loud. Because in those moments, half the time the audience would not even hear me say it, even though I say it out loud. But you say it out loud so the actor can hear it. And, hope that, and most of the time, people who go to the live theater expect anything, so they like all that involvement. But if an actor is really stuck, and you know the line, then I see no reason why you shouldn't say it, you know? So it doesn't happen very often, however, but it has happened.
Paul Gemignani is my guest, and he's getting a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Tonys. He's been music director for just about all of Stephen Sondheim's musicals, and he's currently music director on Broadway for Kiss Me, Kate. Was it your ambition as a kid to work in Broadway shows?
No. My ambition as a kid, my mother wanted me to be a classical musician, which I tried that for a while. But actually, I ended up being a drummer. When I was in high school, I was in the string section in the orchestra, and all my friends were in the band. So I tried playing tuba for a while. Didn't like that very much, too heavy to carry around. And one of my friends talked me into percussion, which has to be there, but you don't have to carry it there, which appealed to me at the time, being a really lazy high school person. But I made a lot of money playing drums. I played in nightclubs in San Francisco, and I played around the country, and I could conduct, which I always wanted to do, always. I didn't know what I wanted to do with it, but I knew that that was something I wanted to do. So I used to conduct to records in my room when I was a kid.
You had worked with Harold Prince and Stephen Sondheim, you know, from the start of your career as a music director, through the time that Sondheim and Harold Prince split up in the early 80s after the box office failure of Merrily We Roll Along. What did it mean for you when Sondheim and Hal Prince split up?
I had to choose. It wasn't an easy choice. I have a great deal of respect for both men. I love both men. They gave me my career, so it was not an easy choice to make. But I went with Steve because of the musical connection and how connected I feel to Steve's material and work. And, you know, you don't meet many people in your life that artistically you feel connected with, or you feel like you're supposed to be there and you're supposed to be doing what you're doing with this person. Steve is one of those people for me. He is the person for me in that respect when it comes to music.
Can you explain why, what it is about his music?
I have no clue. Mm-hmm. I can tell you what I feel, but I can't tell you why. I don't know why. All I know is our relationship musically is built on the fact that for some reason unknown to me, I totally understand his music. I totally understand what his intentions are. I've never had to question it. I don't have to ask him a lot of questions. It's always been that way from day one. You know, in fact, now when we do a show together, he rarely shows up because he trusts me, which is very flattering. But, you know, I have to say to him, you got to come because maybe I'm doing something you're not going to like. You got to come and see this.
My guest is Broadway music director Paul Gemignani. On Sunday, he'll receive a Tony Award for Lifetime Achievement. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is music director Paul Gemignani, and he's been music director on most of Stephen Sondheim's musicals, including Sunday in the Park with George. And this year he gets the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Tonys. Can you think of a moment in a musical that you conducted where every night you'd say to yourself, this is what it's about for me. This is the kind of musical feeling, the kind of Broadway feeling that I live for?
I have to say Sunday in the Park. I have to say when Mandy and Bernadette sing We Do Not Belong Together, that's a moment that popped into my mind when you asked me that question. I'm sure there's 1,000 others, but, you know, working the 12 years I worked with Steve and Hal, I don't have to work anymore after that. I mean, all the thrill and all the expectations I had as an artist were fulfilled in that 12 years. Am I tired of working now? No. And will I continue until I can't work anymore? Absolutely. I'm just saying that, you know, I feel kind of greedy at this point because I've had such great experience and great times in the past and had an opportunity to do so much artistically because of those two guys. That, you know, everything else is gravy. But that one place in Sunday in the Park sticks in my mind.
Let's listen to that duet between Mandy Patinkin and Bernadette Peters from Sunday in the Park with George.
Yes, George, run to your work. Hide behind your painting. I've come to tell you I am leaving because I thought you might care to know. Foolish of me, because you care about nothing.
I care about many things.
Things! Not people.
People, too. I cannot divide my feelings up as neatly as you. And I am not hiding behind my canvas. I am living in it.
But you care for it yourself.
I care for this painting. You will be in this painting.
I have something you can use.
I had thought you would destroy.
Because I understand that I left that.
And there's nothing I can say, is there?
Yes, George, there is. You could tell me not to go. Say it to me. Tell me not to go. Tell me that you're hurt, tell me you're relieved. Tell me that you're bored, anything, but don't assume I know. Tell me what you feel.
What I feel? You know exactly how I feel. Why do you insist you must hear the words when you know I cannot give you words? not the ones you need. There's nothing to say. I cannot be what you want.
What do you want,
George? I needed
George?
You and you left.
There was no room
you
for me.
You will not accept who I am. I am what I do, which you knew, which you always knew, which I thought you were a part of.
No, you are complete, George. You are your own. We do not belong together. You are complete, George. You are alone. I am unfinished. I am diminished. What made it so right together? What made it all wrong? No one is you, George.
That's We Do Not Belong Together from Sunday in the Park with George. Conducting that was one of music director Paul Gemignani's favorite Broadway experiences. I asked him to think of another.
The first thing that Sweeney sings in Sweeney Todd to his Razors, that moment sticks in my mind.
Friends?
Friends, yeah.
This is the moment when the barber, Sweeney Todd, who's been put in prison, is out of prison. He's seeking revenge against the judge who locked him up and shouldn't have. And the judge is now planning to marry Sweeney's daughter. It's an ugly story. but finally, Sweeney's reunited with his razors, and he's going to use them not only to be a barber, but to take his revenge. And he sings this beautiful song about how he's reunited with his friends, but what he's really thinking about is revenge.
Right.
What's so wonderful about this moment for you, conducting it?
Well, the beauty of the music and the irony of the idea. You know, it gives you something to perform. It's not, you know, it's not 32 bars in 4/4 time. It's, you know, a beautiful melody in an intense dramatic moment that's taking the story from one place to another. That is the theater to me. Musical or otherwise.
Well, Paul Gemignani, congratulations on your Tony. Will your part be televised, or are you getting one earlier in the day behind the scenes?
I have no idea. I have no idea what they're going to do. They haven't told me what the process is.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks.
Paul Gemignani is a Broadway music director. On Sunday, he'll receive a Tony Award for Lifetime Achievement.